you know, Scream 7. Sad. Like I say, sad.
Scream 7.
Sad. I'll still go see it, but sad.
Maybe roll credits after that.
Roll credits, period. That's it, guys. Thanks so much for watching. 's welcome to another episode of Katie Afraidy on the Fangoria Network. I'm your host, Katie Huttenbach, and I am so excited to have these two on. They are super talented. You might have seen their movies, Abigail, Ready or Not, Scream 5 and 6.
Well, we're here to talk about devil
shit. Yeah, we're here to talk about devil shit. Is Matt and Tyler from Radio Silence. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah. This is going to be great. This has already been, we've already been chatting about
the mic stands.
Yeah. Popcorn buckets.
VHS. Threatening. Little Starship Troopers side quest. Yeah.
It's such a good movie. It's such a good movie. You know, threatening children as one does. You know, always good. Always good. So, Abigail, congratulations on
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Been getting rave reviews. I've seen it now 3 times.
What?
Hey. Yeah. Well, the first two times were free.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, the third time I should go.
You had to go out and support.
I should actually like pay a little bit of money.
Hell yeah.
So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
How did you see it the first 2 times?
Pirated.
Pirated. Yeah. Legally. USC had a screening, and then I was at the premiere as well.
Awesome.
So, yeah. How many times have you guys watched it?
I think collectively, so we should keep count sometime.
I do. I keep count. I keep count of all of our movies every time we watch them. Yeah, I could look it up. I'm not going to right now. It'd be a fucking waste of time.
Yeah, I'm curious. Collectively, it's probably
this one was different though because we watched it.
Well, it was because pieces.
We didn't. Because of the strike, we edited the first half and then the second half.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a different situation this time.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But probably pushing 200 total.
Oh, at least.
Yeah,
at least.
Full watches.
Wow.
So many times.
That's
we feel
a
like
lot.
That's so important though because we try to make sure that we're entertained every time.
Yeah.
That even after you've seen it 200 times that it's not a chore to turn it on and watch it from start to finish because the movies that we love that we want to rewatch time and time again, it's not like they're surprising to us when we watch them for the 30th
time.
Sure. It's because you genuinely just love the experience and so sort of watching it like that many times and making sure that only the good shit remains is part of the assignment to us.
That's such a good, I mean, your films are so, like, they're easily rewatchable. And they're fun. So 200 times, that's crazy. And you don't, it does not get tiring at all.
No, I mean, I think it does when there's like that section that you're like, fuck, that's not working yet. And I know it and I'm going to watch it again. And maybe it'll be revealed why. But
I always like the part, you know, we always hit a part towards the end. I'd say it's the last, like, 2 or 3 weeks of the edit that you just go, I hate this.
Why have we been living with this? we've
reached the point we have to change this thing.
Yeah.
And then usually that ends up changing the scene in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And we always end up liking it better. But it's like shot by shot, you're just like, we love it. This doesn't work. Let's change it.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like because the things around it get better. And so then the things that aren't working as well as that stuff, they just stick out, right? It's just clear. It becomes obvious what is great and what is good. And the only way to sort of reach that point is to just, I mean.
And sometimes you've always the end. Sometimes I'm just like, I've never liked this. Yeah. And now we have to deal with it because we have a week left.
So what in Abigail, like, was the last minute change? If you remember, because
I mean, it was the ballet. It was or the Sammy dance, the Sammy Abigail puppet dance was like the last
thing.
The last thing we were cutting on. Part of that was just music, getting the rights to the Danzig song and
getting everybody on board for the Danzig song.
Getting everybody behind that choice. And then, you know, the mixing of it and making sure that the edit was like very much to the beat.
Editing the song too. This guy, Ben Zales, who's incredible, he's our music editor, he kept cutting different versions of the song because we were like, is it the whole song? Mm-hmm. Is it just a chorus? And you kind of get over it. And then I think it was probably like within the last week of editing that we got the edit that's in the movie.
Yeah, I think we conformed on the soundstage a new version
of that. Yeah, that's probably right.
But that scene is what probably three times the length of what it how it appears in the movie. I mean, it was a longer, much longer kind of choreographed piece.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the actual dance. Yeah.
And that was the challenge of it, was making sure, you know, when you have an abundance of cool shit, it's like, what's the coolest of the cool shit? Yeah. And so that was a part of that too, was just making sure that we weren't leaving like the best moments, choreography moments, dance moments, performance moments, you know, on the floor. That was I think the last.
Yeah.
The last thing.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. With music in the film, again, in all of your films, the scores, the sound, you guys are so smart with like picking songs. Do you guys pick those, or is someone else helping you with that? Because it's so important for every movie.
No, we spend a lot of time on the music.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, and Brian Tyler does our scores. He's done all of our scores, and we just trust him implicitly. He's like, he can like read our minds and then make it something way better than we could ever hope for. And then with the actual like songs, we spend so much time trying to get them to fit and trying to like feel it out and make sure that it's right for the movie and right for the scene. And it's, I'd say there's not a single scene in any of our movies that we haven't tried 100 songs for every song that we end up with.
Okay.
And I think also it's about making sure that the music feels it feels eclectic and different from song choice to song choice, that it's not all just oldies or not all just one genre. Right. I think like the tone of our movies that sort of does a dance and the genre does a bit of a dance. We love that the music also should do that, so that when you listen to the soundtrack, it feels like, wow, what a weird, crazy thing that all of these songs go together, but they do. Yeah.
I really hope there's somebody out there
that feel
that like finds playlists for our songs, for our movies, because we treat them like soundtracks, because we grew up
when soundtracks
mattered, and like, oh, I love this, you know, and it's like.
And we're introduced to music through movies, via those soundtracks.
We're very much hits against the like, put in a giant song, because then everybody will feel like it's a giant movie. We're like, no, fuck that. Put in a song that nobody's heard.
Yeah.
I think Billie Eilish is as close as we got to that in Scream 6.
Yeah. And that was a song that our editor dropped in his assembly cut.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like,
He
really
didn't know. Sorry,
he didn't even know.
Call
you, AJ,
because that song is called "The Party's Over."
Yeah,
it's after the frat party in Scream 6, and he was like, "Oh, this works." Had no idea it was Billie. I was like, "Yo, dude, that's like one of the most expensive songs
you could
find."
Who is Billie? Small little indie artist.
Yeah.
You guys also, and you do something that I really appreciate, and I hope others do. I love a good ending with a amazing credit song.
Us too.
Because I feel like so many films just drop the ball on that. Burn My Tongue immediately was like, what's this song? Need it.
Yeah,
I downloaded it immediately.
Created for the movie.
So good.
Yeah.
Such a good song.
Gene Dawson.
So freaking good. And like, you know, Still Alive with Demi Lovato. Amazing. Yeah. Love Me Tender. Like that version. It just, everything fits and wraps it up so nicely, but also makes you want to stay for the, you know, to see all of the credits roll.
Thank you for noticing that. That's like a, it feels a little bit like sort of lost. It's sort of a lost art, you know, that when the movie ends, I think people are like, okay, phone's out. Like there, and we, again, grew up in a time where you want to sort of just sit and process the movie, and there's nothing helps that better than having a fucking amazing song to accompany the last few moments of that experience. And
and if it can be an original,
it's going to be original, like, if it can be tailored. I mean, like, what a, and to be able to work with an artist and show them the movie, and I know when we spoke with Gene, it was like, we want it to be triumphant but feel sort of dark and gritty but cathartic, like just giving sort of words,
like keywords,
and there's something so fun in seeing their interpretation of that collection of words. And I mean, Gene just like sent us that track, and we were like, what? And we've been temping with another song of his that was a little softer and more sentimental,
Pirate Radio,
which I don't know if you're a fan of Gene Dawson, but he is like,
I am now.
I mean,
so
like,
good.
So next level.
Like,
his music does that thing that we try to do in our movies, where it feels like you hear all of the genres that are influencing him in every song. Like, he's not afraid to really mix those things.
Well, he's the genre. And
He is the singular. Yeah, he is the reason it all works. Rad. And so it was such an obvious choice for us when we were
thinking
of an artist to close this one out.
And I think it's fun too doing things at like this level where they're giant for us. They're big movies, but they're not like, you know, $200 million movies.
Yeah.
And they don't need like a, you know, I don't like an Adele song or something.
Oh, for
so
sure.
we literally can just be like, hey, we really like this artist. Is everybody cool with it?
Yeah.
Great.
We're gonna
ask him if he'll do it. He's like, we'll do it. And it just feels very like kind of, you know, DIY almost. It's not like we had to go.
Yeah, working with your friends.
Things. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, the editing also with like Burn My Tongue and like, you know, she's got the candy and you just let them like the beat drops and then when it goes to black, it's just I am also an editor and I appreciate those little things. I'm like, and drop. Yeah. Look at that. Credits roll. It's awesome. So
funny. I like for us we sort of know that a scene is working when you actually put a song to it and whether it's really on the moment or it's like just it feels like cutting a good scene is a little bit like there's a music to it, mm-hmm. right? And there's a structure to it that is very, very lyrical. And we sort of know the scene is working when you put a song and you go, oh shit, like it's lining up. Any song, by the way, you could drop in and it just feels like the movements are happening, you know, verse, chorus, you know, bridge, all of that. Those scenes, a good scene has all of those same design sort of in it fundamentally. And it's fun to like put a song in and go, oh, wow, what a cheat code.
Yeah.
It all works.
So freaking good. Again, also why again I kept saying it, because I'm like, this is, I just want to see the ending and be like, yes, get out of there.
I want it to be over.
Thank God, roll the credits, get me out of here. So when you first got the Abigail script, what were your thoughts on it and what made that script different from, you know, I'm sure you guys get hundreds of scripts that like that one was the one you guys wanted to do.
I feel like we have a bunch of different answers for this. I think the one that immediately just popped into my head is it was an original idea that Universal wanted to make and were going to let us make it if we could kind of crack it. Mm-hmm. And because they liked the script a lot, but they were like, we're not sure exactly. There's something we need to still work out. And so if you guys want to take a swing at it, blah, blah, blah. And I think for us, there was just something so exciting about the possibilities of it. You know, there was like, a heist movie, which we've always wanted to make, a straight up thriller, a heist movie. Mm-hmm. There was a monster movie, which we've always wanted to make a monster movie. And then, you know, we love genre mashing and making it its own thing. And for us, just that architecture, we're like, oh, let's do this. Like there's something really exciting here. And then you have all of these characters that can be filled out and can become kind of what they end up becoming, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, the actors had so much to do with that. But knowing that that's a possibility is really exciting to us that the script allowed room for like interpretation and for everyone to kind of put their own like, you know, thing into the character just was really exciting. I don't know.
I'm thinking about it kind of it just sort of dawned on me like comparing it to our first read of Ready or Not and how similar but different they were. Ready or Not was like so amazing on the page, but it was missing that like really iconic thing that you just go,
the distillation.
I can
of the
see
idea.
The poster. I know who I'm rooting for. I know what the concept is. Like this is the thing that it sticks in your brain. With
Guy
Abigail,
Busick is gonna kill him for saying it.
I'm gonna Abigail, make sure I single this.
But
part
it wasn't.
Out.
It wasn't. You know, the original draft of Ready or Not wasn't the wedding night. It was the week leading up to the. It was. Okay. It was just meeting the family for the first time. And so that really grabby image of Grace in the wedding dress with the shotgun, like that was something that got that we discovered. You know, as we were nearing. Prep. I mean, we had to sort of reconfigure that script because Get Out came out.
Yeah.
And has a bit of a similar flavor to it, right?
Yeah.
A,
the first a half of the movie
boyfriend
was
meeting.
The same stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but so Ready or Not, so amazing on the page, but didn't have that like really distilled sort of idea. Abigail was sort of the opposite. It was still good on the page, but at the core of the concept was a little girl vampire that was dressed as like a ballerina. And we obviously amplified that. But even in the script, she was still in like her rehearsal costume, right? Yeah. So there was the idea of what that kind of iconic image was, that just you see it and you go, oh, I get the tone of this movie. Like, yeah. I'm gonna have a fucking great time. I think that was really front and center with it. And honestly, a lot of that was William and the way he sort of pitched it to us, right?
Yeah, William's our producer.
The script came to us as something that was already sort of on a fast track, and we knew was going to need like a tone pass, and that we were going to bring Guy on to do some writing on it. But William pitched it to us as it's a heist movie. Yeah. You know, these people kidnap a girl and they realize she's a vampire, yeah. And we're like, oh, that's fun. Just crystal fucking clear.
Oh yeah,
so it's like so simple, so specific, and so it was just really obvious. Like the tone was going to be an easy thing, yeah, to design out of that kind of kernel of an idea.
Yeah. Wow, that was really well said. The fact that she's in her little ballet outfit the whole time and also sparkly shoes. Nah, that's the part that shoes. Got me. I was like, she's in sparkly shoes. I mean, like, I couldn't, I, if you guys were in a room with Abigail, like the actual vampire, would you guys try to befriend her, or would you try to like run and hope for the best?
I mean, we got to know Alicia so well. Yeah. She's like the sweetest human being.
But I'm saying Abigail, the real.
It's so hard to separate.
I know.
I don't know. I keep feeling like the last thing you would probably do is laugh before you died. Like, seeing her, I mean. Yeah, I remember choosing those shoes. Remember the costume fitting?
Oh, yeah.
There were three sets of shoes. There were some like ballet flats. There was just a pair of like kind of plain sneakers and the sparkly ones. And we're like,
that's insane.
And our line producer was like, guys, those are really fucking expensive.
$800 shoes.
Yeah, but
we were like, they look like kids.
But it's funny though, because it's sparkly. You wouldn't think that sparkles and murder go together, but they do. We need more.
Yeah, and it was always about like, how do you mash up the like violence and innocence at all times? Like, how do you make those things feel like they always sort of coexist with that character?
And also, she's just having a blast, and it's like, those are fun shoes.
Yeah,
she's having so much fun talking with these people. Like,
why not? Yeah. Have fun with it. Also, I just love that, and I don't know if this was in the script or not, where she's, you know, going to chase after Peter, just does a quick little leap and they're just like, we'll twirl, and I love that, being like, oh, I'm gonna kill you, but I'm gonna do like a pirouette.
Yeah, I'm performing.
Real quick, let me just do that. I love that.
We did a lot of the, because again, like we were talking about earlier, like the dancing became a thing because Alicia could dance. Like, it was, I think on the page it was, she was finishing a ballet rehearsal in the opening scene. And then we found out Alicia could dance, and we're like, oh, let's make this a bigger deal. Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool. And we were still like not sure how much that would play into it. So we shot a lot of those scenes, her running like a monster.
Yeah.
Her doing a dance version.
Okay.
So that we would have the kind of the materials in the edit to be like, well, if it's working, we can like really steer into this. And if it's not, we don't have to do it.
It worked.
But we ended up loving it too. So we were like, by the end of the edit, it's another one that we were like, I feel like we can get another twirl in here.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That's how we should have more. Yeah.
We always were talking about how do you make sure that those scenes, that those chases feel like they could only exist in this movie? Mm-hmm. And
Megan and us.
The dance is a big part of that you go, oh, ballerina vampire. Like,
it's been sitting there right in front of us this whole time.
Just let her fucking dance. Like, what a cool thing. You know, what a cool, unique to this movie thing.
Yeah.
It is funny that we keep seeing the Megan thing, which we totally get and adore. But because our thing was, because it happens organically, we were probably like a week or two in. We were like, oh, shit, fucking Megan did this.
Yeah.
And then because the only movie we had been talking about was the dance at the end of Us. Because for us, that was such a rad scene and such a cool way
violent,
to kind of.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And then we were like, oh, no, is that a problem? And yeah, fuck it. Same world. No, they can have a.
We watched Megan and we were like, there's actually not a lot of dancing.
No,
people,
it's just the
people
one scene.
Think that there's a lot because that big viral moment.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just that one.
Yeah,
that
you guys
one sort of moment.
You guys put it throughout the whole film, so
we're still very much into the Megan versus Abigail.
Oh yeah.
Movie in a few years.
So who would win, Megan versus Abigail? Robots versus a supernatural.
I mean, I don't think
that's a great question.
I don't think Megan could could drain Abigail. So I think that that's Abigail's true. Got that.
Yeah, because if she got one, the liquid in her, she'd got that
one. Yeah.
Yeah, in the bag. Sorry, Megan.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Megan. You've heard it here first. Exclusive. They said it.
Excited for the hate messages. Yeah.
So, what was something that you had to change in Abigail, and what was something that, So, what was one thing you had to change, and is there something that the studio made you change that you're like, no, I'm keeping this in?
Short answer on the second question is no. Nothing got forced on us, which was
that's amazing.
Awesome. I would say this is we've gotten really lucky with all our movies. Like,
yeah.
There's no like director's cut. Like, yeah. At most, there's a shot in scene five that we were forced to take out that we love.
Yeah.
But besides that, like, most of our shit is like
our shit.
It's mm-hmm. what it is. Yeah. And with this one, the studio, and I hope it's okay to say this, but I thought it was really great. We both did. Yeah, we got
the notes doc.
The notes doc. We got sent a notes doc after our second test screening. Mm-hmm. That was because the only kind of overall note out of the test screening that we all agreed on was, it's still too much and we need to get it down.
Too long, yeah.
And so they sent us this, like, I think it was 4 pages of notes, all of which I don't even know if they really liked, but they were things that could be cut, you know, which they're not wrong. They were like the fun character moments that really mattered a lot to us. And I think they liked them too. And they were like, so you can do these notes or you can take out 10 minutes. It is up to you. And so that 10 minutes came out in about 2 days.
It's really interesting. I remember going back to that notes doc while we were doing that, though, and going, oh, we in a lot of ways have, whether we address them specifically to the way that they had given the note, they were actually, the things that they were giving notes on were, they were circling the right area.
Yeah, there's those areas that you just look at and go,
yeah.
It's like what we were talking about earlier. Yeah. You're like, something's still not quite working here, you know? And when your feet are to the fire, you just have to be really honest about that. You can't like bullshit yourselves anymore and be like, maybe it's working.
Yeah.
But we love that, like, when people ask us, oh, is there a director's cut of anything you guys have made that you wish was out there? And being able to like really honestly say no. And in fact, like, we even sometimes have a hard time putting the deleted scenes on bonus features because mm-hmm. we're like, they're not in the movie for a reason.
Yeah.
And there are some fun moments, but we really try hard to make sure that only the best essential things end up in. We don't just fall in love with stuff to fall in love with it. Like, it has to be in service of the movie being as good as it can be. And I think that's part of what working together is. It's sort of much easier to like be in the vacuum of your own mind until you have somebody sitting next to you going,
really? You really like this? That? You like really it? Want that? You think that works? It does not work. Okay, if you think it works, sure, but I'm going to sit here.
Passive aggressive.
Are you sure about that? You sure you want to put that in there?
You sure?
Okay.
What was the first part of the question?
Just kind of the same thing about like, is there anything that
changed?
Or that you would change?
That we would change. I think that at this stage, anything that we would change is like, very technical and not story. It's not like it's more like, I could have brought that sound up a couple decibels, or man, did we like hit that transition with the music the right, you know, it's all that little that shit that only we understand because we've like
seen another thing.
We've That's sort of been under the hood for so long, but that really is the only thing that exists in this movie.
It's always stuff you could change because you've seen other versions of it, but it's like, I think at the end of the day for us, it's, you know, it's the performances are always like our number one thing. Like, are the good performances in, are the best performances, best takes, and then just making sure that the story never lets up, you know. We're really big fans of like
being ahead.
If you leave the room, you're gonna miss something, you know. Like,
no pee breaks.
No pee breaks at all for these movies. I also have to say I really appreciate your movies, and I watch a lot of movies. My whole life been watching a lot of movies for this podcast now. I watch a lot of horror movies, both, you know, for myself and for, you know, to review and whatnot. But consistently, your films, I get lost in them, which is really hard for me to do because I also, like, I work in the industry as well. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And I feel like that's hard.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. But, like, it's... Yeah. By the way, us rewatching and rewatching, we're aiming at that at some point you're watching the movie and you're like not even thinking about notes, that you're just like, I was just watching to be entertained. I wasn't actually thinking about the making of it anymore.
I think one of the things that we've talked about that sort of happened organically for us, but we find it in every movie, and I really love it, like, personally, is they're kind of weirdly hangout movies, mm-hmm. and you want to exist in that world. Even all this crazy shit's happening, but it's like, I mean, Ready or Not and Abigail are both good examples of, like, there's a real warmth to them. There's crackly fires, and, you know, like, you're in that world, and there's fog.
Even though the characters, like, are all despicable, you're like, it'd be kind of a fun hang.
I'd
want to
hang out with them, you know?
It's like a nice, you know.
With Fitch from Ready or Not. Like,
yeah, that'd be fun.
You're like in a nice mansion, just kind of kicking it, you know? Even the Scream movies have that,
just
where it's
leave,
like,
before the murder starts happening.
Yeah, that's fine, you know? Just don't be a part of the family, you know? Then you won't. You'll be fine. What are the visual parallels between Abigail and Ready or Not?
Oh, man, there are, I mean, there are a lot. I think that, I'm just trying to think sort of very specifically. I mean, look, we love a movie where you start somebody just in a very sort of clean and control look, and then by the end you've completely
just decimated,
stripped
them
of everything.
They're coated in blood.
They're coated in blood. Like, they're wearing, we talk a lot about that, wanting to get to the end of the movie and you see the character wearing the experience of the movie. Mm-hmm. It means that you've taken the audience through the ride with that character. And Die Hard, I mean,
it also means we watched Die Hard
too. We're only just ever making Die Hard. But that's a real, we sort of love thinking about the end and the beginning, and and how far we can sort of polarize those two things. Because if we've done it well, then the sort of watching the transition from A to B should be like this extreme, insane, kind of absurd, unexpected adventure. Mm-hmm. And that was just a big thing that we took from Ready or Not and brought into this.
I also think, this is just like a funny little story, but like when Brett, our DP on Scream 5 and Scream 6, he came to visit us when we were shooting Abigail, and Aaron, our DP on Abigail, and they were hanging out, and we were, of course, being like, fight, DP, fight. But but it was funny because it was really nice watching them talk, because, and there was just conversations about, like, how they shot things differently, and how it was just really interesting watching two people who we've worked that intimately with have this conversation about, like, oh, like, remember Aaron being like, oh, I was like, oh no, am I ripping off what you did in Ready or Not? Because Brett shot Ready or Not with us. You know, and then they kind of had a little discussion about it. But it's interesting because for us, you know, that's their world that we're obviously involved in a lot. But it was really fun to see them kind of talk about the differences in the way they did a very similar house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other real clear visual, I guess, similarities or parallels, the body pit and the goat pit, those things are, I think that was a little bit, I mean, there was a scene in the Abigail script where it was originally scripted as they walk into this empty pool and they find Abigail dancing with Dean's body, or around Dean's body. Yeah. And we were like, well, it's cooler if we make that dance a thing and she's actually dancing with the headless body. Like, what a fun, weird, you know, sort of nightmare image that is. And then then if you have this amazing pool, I mean, what a better, cooler way to use it than to fill it with the bodies of our other victims. We were always looking for ways to make sure that the history of who Abigail is and what she does is alive and well in that house. Mm-hmm. There's even stacks of luggage in one of the rooms of the house that you see.
It's when Dan's,
as Frank is sitting on the bed.
It's one shot, but there's like 100 suitcases.
Hundreds of suitcases and clothes, piles of clothes. Mm-hmm. This idea that she's, I mean, for centuries has been killing people here.
It's also Guy Busick always writes a foyer scene.
Mm-hmm.
We have foyer scenes in Scream 5, foyer scenes in Ready or Not, foyer scenes in this movie.
We should make a movie called Foyer.
Honestly.
Foyer.
So I think that, you know, you see the pool, and in
obviously
Ready
the
or
end
Not,
shot too.
The
oh,
goat,
sorry,
the goat pit was like a thing that I think we are proud of, but we did the small version of it because we only had the time and the resources to do like the three wall set version of that. And in this, it was like, well, let's fucking let's like do the thing. Let's do the thing that we sort of imagined and wanted to do.
I think subconsciously a lot of this movie was like, well, we had like a little bit of resources at our disposal for Ready or Not, but what if we had all the resources?
Yeah, and then the explosions, you know, the exploding bodies, another visual parallel.
Again, Melissa, I think, at the end.
Yeah, Melissa at the end. But I think
it's very much a spiritual
connection
there.
What, like, what is it with you guys with pits and bodies? You know? Like just big pools of bodies.
It's so gross.
It's so gross. It's great. It's
like just old school horror. Like I think it's like crawling through the graveyard. It's Poltergeist. Yeah. It's the pool scene in Poltergeist. Yeah. You know, there's just nothing more.
It's that Jennifer Connelly movie where tactile. She falls in.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called. Phenomena? No.
Which movie?
Jennifer Connelly, she young, falls in a pit full of bodies.
Are you talking about Labyrinth?
No,
she
no.
She falls down, the hands grabbing her.
I mean, I haven't seen it for years, but anyways.
So what are your favorite vampire movies? What movies influenced Abigail?
I mean, I would say that the movie that we talked about probably the most in this, maybe the two, well, Lost Boys for vampires talked about a lot, just especially tonally.
Yeah.
But we talked about Alien a ton because of the structure, because we knew that we were like, the title is going to be the name of the monster, same as Alien. Yeah. The first half of the movie is going to be basically, here are characters in this world, get to know them. They're going to have their interplay. That's what it is. And there's this like looming tension of this thing. And then the midpoint is basically, oh shit, now the title character is coming to fuck everybody up. You know, we talked about that a whole lot. Getting ourselves comfortable with knowing that the monster was going to be revealed in the trailer and that the audience isn't going to get it until 45 minutes into the movie. We talked about those a lot.
We talked about Lost Boys a ton.
Yeah, Lost Boys a ton.
Just the tone of that, the fun of that movie. And it's also like legitimately scary. The vampires are like really terrifying in that movie. We talked about 30 Days of Night a lot.
Poppy. Yeah.
And Let the Right One In a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was, we talked about the sort of vampire canon as a whole a lot, because I think what we knew we were going to do was sort of fuck with the rules. And all of those movies and shows fuck with the rules. Like, it's, I think why, one of the reasons why vampire stories are sort of evergreen is that they're not so forced into this small box, and you know, there really is a lot of room for interpretation and to have fun with and subvert what you might think a vampire is. And so it was I think we just, it was about getting comfortable with, we're gonna do this shit where like Abigail's gonna puppet this person, like we're gonna like do,
like, why not?
We're gonna do some weird,
we can do anything
cool, new things, and feeling fully confident that we could have the audience on board for that, because if they'd seen half of the vampire movies that we've seen, they'd know that there's totally room to make those choices.
And it's also fun. We, as filmmakers, invented the rules. We can make new ones.
Yeah.
There are no rules.
Totally.
That was the most freeing thing about watching, you know, every vampire movie ever made, is you're like, oh, there's no consistency here.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fucking awesome.
This is great. It's great. It's amazing. So with the trailer, was that a choice to reveal the vampire? Or was there a trailer where you're like, what if we just...
No, we never saw a trailer.
We never saw
it. We knew that, though. Okay. We were like, there's no way they're going to have...
I think we hoped that there would be a version that that would be possible, but I think we also knew that it just was never
going to
be
possible.
And
we've done this enough now to know that, like...
Yeah, even prior to our involvement, there was knowledge about this movie being a Dracula's Daughter remake, reboot.
Which it never really
reimagining.
Was.
Like, it never was, but I think that when Steven had originally sold the script to Universal, I think it hit the trades as that. So it was this weird... It was this weird thing where the cat was sort of already out of the bag, way prior to us being involved in the process at all. And so it was a little bit like, well, fuck, how do you use it to your advantage?
Also, we just really steered into like, we know this is going to happen. We have to get comfortable with that. This movie cannot be a movie that, if you know that, it sucks.
Oh yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so it was like, cool. Like, and again, like we're talking about the rewatchability, like our goal is, cool. I hope you have a great time when you watch the first time. Don't know it. Go in blind if you can. Yeah. I mean, I'd say that for basically every movie.
Oh, yeah.
But ideally, you want to watch it again, mm-hmm. and you have even more fun, you know, because now you kind of understand the mechanics of it in a cool way. But yeah, we knew that was going to happen, and I don't think we ever... I think after doing two Scream movies where we literally had to beg the studio to take out kills when we're like, you guys are giving away, this is a whodunit and you're taking people off the table.
Yeah.
We, I think, had a little bit of fatigue from having that fight. Mm-hmm. And so for this, we went into it being like, let's just make a movie that we can be really proud of.
Yeah.
And the marketing's going to do what the marketing's going to do. And
hopefully it gets people excited.
Yeah. And hopefully people go see the movie.
Yeah. And even, you know, knowing that she's a vampire, you're still like, you're waiting. You're like, oh, I know. Like, even in like Ready or Not, you're like, okay, I know she's gonna something shit's about to go down.
Yeah, there's dread.
Yeah, and you're like, I don't know when it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Oh, is it this? Nope, it's not this time. She goes in the bedroom. Maybe the next time? Nope. And there she is, little vampire.
Yeah, and I think for us it was, if you put the audience ahead of the characters, then there's suspense in unexpected moments, and I think for us it was, there was this. I mean, it was fairly late into the edit that we decided to cross cut the opening ballet with the introduction of the characters, you know, the Breakfast Club, and it sort of dawned on us like, oh, let's just
the dinner club
advertise that they're all Abigail's audience, that and they are all a part of her master plan. Like, she's in control from the opening minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm.
And she's putting on a show.
Yeah, the byproduct of that I think always existed, but just being really explicit about setting that up in the beginning was that, you know, then all of those instances of, you know, Abigail saying, you know, my arms hurt, and Joey taking the cuffs off in that scene, you're just sort of like, is something going to happen now?
No.
And then she just, you know, there are all of these, it's suddenly like you're calibrating the ride in a different way. And I think for us, it was just being really confident that suspense and that tension is really satisfying, you know, and that ultimately it sort of builds to this crescendo of fuck it. The only place that it can go now is like you just light the fuse on the vampire movie at the midpoint and you're fucking off.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't let up. Just,
we did try. Oh, sorry.
Oh, you're good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we did try. Part of the you know, pre-production, a lot of it was moving the vampire reveal around. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had it at the end of the second act. We had it at the beginning of the second act. And they all just felt, it's like the too little, too much.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, it never quite worked. It ran out of steam when you had it too early. You're just like, cool, it's just people running from a fucking vampire.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I remember in that version where we were talking about it, it felt like, oh, well, now we need to introduce a new villain and a new obstacle, and it was like, wait, why are we doing that? Like, this is it's so nice that it's this contained, locked in thing, and that we're talking about pressure coming in from the outside, but it's inside the whole fucking time. Yeah, it was a really wild experiment.
It was really interesting.
So let's talk everybody's favorite thing to talk about: blood cannons. How did you guys figure out that this was going to be your thing?
I think there's just only one way to apply that volume of blood to a human being.
Well, we also
the day, like, necessity is the mother of invention.
We played with a bunch of different ways to kill vampires.
Yeah.
And again, to like what we were talking about earlier, you know, there's all the ways we've seen a bunch, and there's, you know, I mean, there are versions of them exploding, and we really gravitated towards those. We're like, that's fucking so much more fun. Yeah. Maybe we do our version of that as opposed to like the shrinking and dying, all those
other
melting
things. The fire,
like, yeah, the turning so to dust, whatever those are. And it felt like we talked about a million different versions, and we just kind of ended up going like, why don't we just blow them up? Like,
why not?
What's like, nothing's stopping us.
Yeah, and it was, I think a lot of that was driven by what can we do practically, and it, you know, the melting effect, the fire effect. We just knew that a lot of that was probably going to end up having to be CG. We have like just a bit of an allergy to it, and it's not that it's, when used well, it's like such an amazing tool, but I think for how gritty and tactile and homemade this movie feels, and we wanted it to feel, it just felt like what's the version of their demise that can be photographed, right? And obviously we're going to be doing a lot of VFX to merge all those plates together and all of that, but that for the most part you're looking at photorealistic elements that are shot on the day and exist in the space. And And I think that was a,
that's a always
big driving force in that. And then I think the tone of the violence is also, I think, really encapsulated and distilled in those explosions, right? Mm-hmm. They're so gross, they're so visceral, but they're also so fucking over the top. Yeah. Like those motherfuckers liquefy. And that is like such a, and it's so instantaneous that it's like surprising and violent and funny and scary. It's like everything that we love about the violence that we try to create in our movies is kind of represented in those, like a single instance of that. Yeah. And so it just felt like, yeah, there's no just sort of cooler way to surprise the audience and the characters in the movie.
and I mean, not for nothing, but like, you know, watching every time we watch the movie with an audience, the reaction to those, we just turn to each other and go like, fuck, like that's all I want is to be in a crowd with that reaction. Because yeah, there's like a gasp and then it's like hilarious, you know, everybody's laughing and you're just like, great, this is why we go to movies. Like
one of my favorite things that I don't think audiences are aware of, because the Sammy exploding is always gets such a big gasp and a laugh, and if you rewatch it and you just listen, we in the sound mix put the sound of Abigail laughing hysterically echoing through the house after Sammy explodes. Okay. And it is like,
It makes me laugh
in a theater so fucking hard. Every time we heard it in the mix, I was just like, oh my God, she turns this girl into a vampire. She tortures her by dancing her and puppeteering her in sunlight, and she's smoking the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then she explodes and she's just laughing. It's like the greatest thing to this kid.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for people to hear that when they're like watching it at home.
I know.
It's such a good,
because you can't hear it in the theater, which is great.
People are laughing too hard. Yeah, but it's such a great little texture.
Oh, we're talking about Abigail, but I gotta talk Scream. Scream is one of my favorite movies of all time. That series, so many people hold that, you know, near and dear to their hearts. And, you know, I know I've seen every documentary about it. I've read every book. Unfortunately, I got into horror kind of like late in like middle school and high school. So I wasn't able to see Scream 4 in theaters. So Scream 5 was my first Scream in theaters.
Oh, wow.
Which was insane and terrifying because I was at the 4D theater for the first time.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah.
We never saw 4D.
We didn't do the 4D on that.
How was it? Was it?
We heard there were a lot of stabs in the back.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I like Avatar. It's like fun. You're like, wee. It's like this one. I'm like, I don't know if I like this. This is bad. So I'm already nervous. Like, who's the killer? You know, first Scream movie back. I'm like, shit. I already got enough anxiety as it is. But so my question to you is, how many times do you think I saw Scream 5 in theaters?
Well, since you're asking,
I gotta look like in your eyes. I'm gonna say 7.
Well, I mean, I was gonna say 3, but let's just 3?
17.
Holy fuck. 17.
What had you coming back? I love that. What was the because we found with Abigail, there's, I mean, a lot of repeat 17. Viewings.
It was a little excessive.
Yeah, but what is it? Was it that the experience of like getting to see Scream in the theater, was there something about the movie particularly that just like was stuck to your brain? What was the?
I just really love seeing Dewey die.
The hands.
Just really love crying.
Too soon.
Cries a lot. Again, it was also like, you know, the first time I saw it in 4D. I saw it in I was in IMAX, but I saw it like in a different like forms. Yeah. There was one time where I was the only person in the theater. That was probably the scariest time because
that feels like not a great idea. Like,
yeah, you don't have the contagious nature of the audience to sort of protect you from your
and
feelings.
I'm like, is somebody in here with me? I don't know.
That's when you sit in the back row.
Yeah, I'm like, I might get murdered, but you know, it's part of the. I'm like, if I die during a Scream movie, it's kind of perfect. Is that a good way to go? I don't know. Okay, I have a few more questions. Then I know you guys gotta get out of here and get back to your, you know, your lives. Although, again, it is a 7-hour podcast.
Yeah.
We're going.
That was a quick 6 hours.
Dude, if time flies when you're having fun, I also have to ask because everyone, you know, debates whether, you know, who killed Dewey. There's no way
It's Amber.
Yeah, it's Amber.
Amber.
Yeah. There's not a third killer.
There's not a third killer.
But or if there is, it's not one that we intended.
I will say.
Chelsea does not lift him up off of his fucking feet. Come on, guys.
there is something. I have not seen Scream 5 since theaters, but I like recently. It was on, I think it's on Hulu. And I just was like, oh, let's just, you know, I'm doing some other stuff. Let's put it on the background. And that scene came on. And I was like, I gotta stop and watch Dewey. There we go. R.I.P. King. And when Ghostface gets hit, it's a man going, ugh, just like ever so quietly. And I was like, man, not huh.
We voice box. We do. Roger does all those hits for us. Yeah. Just so that when we do apply them, it's always in the voice. In the voice of Ghostface.
I was like.
Yeah, we put the voice box in the mask.
Yeah. Which.
Hacks. And then in Scream 6, you could just talk through the mask.
I mean, why not? Why not? You said hacks. Is that what people would say?
Of course.
Oh, God. But I mean, they're Scream movies. They're supposed to be silly. They're supposed to be fun.
100%.
They're gnarly.
They're meant to have a good time for a couple hours.
I guarantee that scene wouldn't be scary if Ghostface was holding a modulator and a cell phone and like kind of trying to hold the knife. Yeah. Like,
it would be kind of funny if he was
solving problems so that the movie is scary and enjoyable. Not trying to make it lame.
Yeah, like you're like the mask has Bluetooth. He's listening to music as well. Yeah.
He's stalking Tara with three things.
Three in things. His- three props. Three hand props. Great fucking directing, Radio Silence.
But that's also, you know, if they were to do another scary movie, that would be
pretty
funny.
That scene's in it. Yeah, where
he's like, hold on, let me just. Hold on. Shut up. Stay down. Shut up. Hold on. I'm going to hit you with the phone. You know what?
We just make it too easy for too easy to spoof.
I mean, we always joke that we should shoot a spoof of a movie while we're doing the movie.
You could make a scary movie and Scream at the same time.
We could just do the same thing. Everybody just, we do it again. We just do a slightly sillier thing.
Why not? And then again, you guys explode in the end. I think that, but you're like directing within the film, but also actually directing the film. It gets super meta. Everyone's confused. You're confused. We're confused. We're like, why not?
I'm in.
We need all of it. Okay, I want you to rank the Scream movies. If you want to include your own, you totally can.
Not gonna do that.
Yeah, we can rank them.
But also, for your favorites.
Yeah.
Ones are just the top dog.
Yeah,
top dog.
I'll go 1, 2, 4, 3.
Yeah, same. 1, 2, 4, 3. I know that's a pretty standard answer, but
yeah,
that's for sure. Like, I mean, I watched six, part of one five, like a couple days one. Ago. Like, yeah. I watch one all the time. I love the first one so much.
It's so good. So good. I am a 4 fan. I think I saw 4 first. Hmm. I didn't mean to. I think it was on streaming on YouTube or
it's
something.
It's such a fun movie. I think too, it's like however you enter the franchise too, like it's the right way to enter it. Yeah. It's like they're all so unique.
Truly.
And fun.
Yeah. I also love how like I'm old enough to remember when they all came out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's I can tell you 3 and 4 were not beloved movies.
Oh,
no matter what anybody says now, they were not beloved movies. Everybody was mad at them. Everybody I knew was like, fuck those movies, they fucking suck.
Yeah, there was like the first sort of franchise hate was like,
yeah, and like movies. it was like intense. People like fucking hated them. And it's so nice to see that they now are so beloved. You know, it's like the way like Jennifer's Body is like getting a new life. You're like, these movies that like some of us really liked at the time, but most people didn't, now because of, you know, everything, the way the world works now, they can find their audience and people fucking get into them. And it's like this thing, you know, we talk about every movie comes out, you know, and like if it doesn't like work right away, you're like, oh, fuck, well, that's a bummer. But there's hope that people find things now and that because they live longer. And it's great to see that Scream is now a beloved franchise, not just people going like, well, the first two were good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask this question as well. Obviously, you know, Scream 7, sad. I'll still go see it, but sad.
Roll credits,
period. That's it, guys. Thanks so much for watching. and people were like, oh, you know, Scream 6 did have a good wrap up, you know, for our characters, but you know, if the story were to continue, would, you know, did you guys have plans for the Fab Four, or were you just like,
no, no plans? Yeah. I think again, it's sort of to the, and I don't think that Jamie and Guy even did. I think they very much like us put all of themselves, all of their good ideas into the thing that's in front of them. And I think, you know, the fun of a Scream movie is that they are episodic, right? Yeah. They do have a close, you know, sort of close-ended story. There's no Scream movie with like that big, you know, Empire Strikes Back cliffhanger where Ghostface behind the door. Yeah. No, it's they all wrap up in a really satisfying way. And that was always our goal, you know, with the intention of, well, fuck yeah, then you get to start from scratch and like, redesign how Ghostface enters the characters' lives in the next one. And no grand plan for Seven. No. No idea what it is.
No idea.
Yeah. It's gonna be. Know nothing. We're all gonna find out, and it's, you know, it's gonna be fun.
It'd be amazing if we just were like, and Seven is a band we just like totally pitch and spoil.
And you're like, well, you could pretend to do that, and then I'll just bleep everything out. And they'll be like, what? Oh my god, you got the scoop. And I'll be like, thank you so much. Have you seen the Scream TV series?
Yes.
Okay. What were your thoughts on that?
I enjoyed it. I watched it when it came out. I was like,
it was fun.
Yeah, like I was like, Scream.
Yeah, and it fits into the like into the world in the way that, like, I think same, you know, how everyone was so hardcore on 3 and 4, and I was like, no, it's just a fun flavor.
Same. Yeah. I was like, put a fucking slasher whodunit on TV any day.
A bunch of teens getting killed. Yeah. Great.
Why I also thought, I can't remember her name, but the lead actress was fucking incredible.
Oh my god.
Like, I thought she was so good.
She's so fun.
Yeah.
And you guys started on YouTube. What was that transition like from YouTube to shooting blood cannons and big plot films?
It's funny. It's drastic, you know.
Yeah.
Significant. But we also, it's not, sometimes we talk about it, we say like we try really hard to kind of keep that like kind of do it yourself work ethic. But I also don't know if we know how not to.
I think had we been doing our own things on YouTube and you get the transition, that's a harder thing.
Yeah. But we
because
were able
we
to
were
sort
always
of
just like
doing
making shit.
Yeah. And we did it so diligently and so much. Like it was like every weekend we'd just go shoot something.
Yeah, it was obsessive.
Yeah. And it was like, and because it was YouTube and because it was short form, there were no parameters and there were no, so we really got to like kind of find our voice and kind of figure out what really like we were into, you know, because we could just try shit and be like, oh, that was really fun. Oh, I loved that. Let's kind of steer into that. We do that again. So we kind of developed our style there. And then the transition was somewhat gradual. You know, it was like we did a VHS segment, which was essentially the segment for VHS was actually something we had written a shorter version of just for our previous stuff.
It was a longer short film.
Yeah. So it didn't feel any different, you know? And I think they gave us like 10 grand for that. Does that sound right? And we were like, cool, we'll take $5,000
grand. I think
it
was 30 and then we used 10 and pocketed the rest.
10 and paid each other.
Yeah. As you should.
So we got paid for the first time, which was thrilling.
That's big.
And then our next movie was like, to us felt like a giant, we had all the money in the world. It was like a $7 million budget. And we were like, that's absolutely fucking insane. I mean, it still feel that way, honestly. But then we went back and did another anthology. So it was like, it was, and we were working with friends on all of these things.
Yeah,
so there was like
we
a
never
very
really
organic
lost that. I feel like there, the sort of biggest thing, and I'd be curious to talk to other directors, you know, who've come from that space and are making bigger things, but I think there was this feeling of, oh, you get a bigger opportunity that you have to show up different. And I think because we'd always worked together and we knew we were always going to continue to work together, there was this feeling of, well, what if we just showed up the same and had more resources?
Yeah.
Like they're hiring us to do a thing because of what we've done, because they like what we've done. They like what we have to say. They like how we do that thing that we do. So they're really just hiring us and giving us better crew, more money, you know, and surrounding us with experienced people. And that is, I think that was a real sort of moment, light bulb moment of like, oh, I don't have to like go in and like act like you know everything. It's like, no, go in and just be like, hey, this is what excites us. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know something, you just say, I don't fucking know, like, who's got the right idea? And then you eventually find yourself surrounded with people who are like excited by finding the right idea.
And I really think you can't, you know, this is true for a ton of shit, but specifically with movies, it's like, I don't think you can actually learn it until you're doing it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, you can watch making short, of movies, but it's not,
it's just different. Like making and every, and we all, you know, we talk to a lot of our friends who are directors and everybody does it totally different.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, and we talk to a lot of our friends who are on crews who are like, the way you guys do it and the way this person does it, the way this person did it, there's different. No consistency between the, you guys.
Like, I mean, even working with Aaron, our DP on Abigail, for the, you know, he's worked much longer than either of us have worked and on many more things than us. But his collaboration with us was the first time he'd ever done it that way.
Yeah,
and it's because we approached the process and that on a relationship with the DP in a really specific way. And he was like, this is fucking great. I've never, this is awesome. I've never done this. Like, awesome. And it's, so I, it really is, it's really, it's
even,
personal.
Even,
it's really fucking personal.
Even in editorial, like Mike, our editor on this, who was great, and he, we have a, on all of our movies, we have a Google Doc that we start in pre-production and we like write the scenes out, and then it's just like, at that phase, it's like notes. Like
story notes.
Gotta talk to production design about this. It's just ideas, stuff, and so we can always be kind of checking in on it. Mm-hmm. And then, then it kind of, it fades a little bit during the actual filming process because we're just too busy and it doesn't.
Yeah.
But then in the edit, it becomes, it's literally where every night we're watching the scenes and we're just like,
it's crazy.
Cut that shot, do this, change that, find a different thing, blah, blah, blah. And Mike was even saying, he's like, I've never done this before. He's like, this is great. Like, I just have all your guys' notes, like, just sitting here and I can, like, and they're very conversational. It's not like.
Yeah, we're not shy about, like. No.
It'll be like, this thing sucks.
The directing fucking sucks here. Like, this
we fuck up. Can we get it better? Like, it's not like, it's very casual, but it's, again,
it's
just
demystifying.
One, it's just the way we do it.
Yeah, but like, movies aren't just like these magical things that appear. Like, you have to create that shit, and it takes time and energy and notes
and thought and people.
Yeah, and disagreements. And it's all of these things that I think. We having, you know, doing it as a duo, those things, there's more energy in that because it's a conversation. It's not
you
like
really
you
like
against the
you
process.
You really like
you
this.
Really like you sure about that? You
Are
sure
you
about
sure?
That?
Sure? I'm not sure, sure we should be working together anymore if you think this.
That's a big yikes. Yeah. That's a big yikes. Again, one final, this is the last one. I'm sorry, I swear to God.
Oh my God, this is a treat.
What is the scariest movie you've ever watched? Because I think that's so interesting to see what scares people with horror. And again, I've seen so many at this point that I'm like, part
I
want to
do like an old one and then a recent one. Like, was there a movie that
I can think
saw?
Of two right off the bat.
Yeah, same. What are your two?
The two that both, like, one theatrical, some, well, not new anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it will be this summer when The Strangers comes out. But seeing The Strangers in the theater, I remember just being like, oh my God, I can't fucking move. Like, I'm so tense right now. But the one when I was younger that I remember watching on VHS and just like got under my skin was The Changeling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Just fucked me up.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my God, this is like so fucking scary.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are two that popped in my head.
People Under the Stairs fucked me up real bad.
Yeah.
I actually don't. Know if I've gone if I like the last time I did a full watch of it because I think I have like a real sense memory of watching that movie for the first time.
You should watch it again. It's pretty
you
wild,
should.
Man.
I
it's
mean,
pretty wild.
It's like he's like running around in like a gimp suit, right? Like,
oh,
a BDSM.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like
mommy
very
and daddy or whatever. I can't remember.
And Seven fucked me up like hardcore.
Yeah, Seven.
That movie is like it's a perfect movie. It's one of those that it's like a rare. Change nothing. There isn't a thing that doesn't work.
Not perfect movie.
Perfectly in that movie, but scary as fuck.
You know, another one for me was when I was really young, a friend's older brother had Nightmare on Elm Street, and I didn't see the whole movie yet, but I watched the opening scene with her and the, you know, in her first dream when he's like just chasing her. It's like credits, and I'll never forget this because it scared the fucking absolute shit out of me, and. I remember seeing at the end, it said directed by Wes Craven. And in my brain, I must have been like 7 or 8 maybe, thinking that Wes Craven, because the name was just so creepy, was the guy chasing her. So I was like, oh, Freddie and Wes are the same.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for my like, you know, pre-pubescent years, was I was like, Wes Craven is Freddy Krueger, and I'm so scared. And then I finally saw the movie not much later. Yeah. And I mean, I like loved it. That was like one of those movies you're just like, oh my God, this is like, just in my DNA now.
And then you go to work on
And it turns out Wes Craven was, we never got to meet him, but every
lovely man.
We tried to get in touch with everybody we could that, you know, knew him. And yeah, it just sounds like he was like one of the most like lovely, like kind people ever.
I feel like that's been our experience with all of the directors in the horror community that we've worked with and have gotten to know, that they're all just like the loveliest, softest, nicest, most well-adjusted.
But have the most fucked up imagination.
That's why, though. I think you have a place for it. Yeah. And it's, there's a, you're fascinated with the like weird dark shit inside of you, that stuff that I think a lot of people, you know, hide, and it sort of festers. Like, we love steering into that stuff. And I think that, you know, it's cathartic. You have a lot of people who are actually really well-adjusted because they're like willing to stare at the darkness.
I remember meeting Ty West for the first time when we were in Sundance for VHS.
He's got one of those names, and the Wes Craven.
No, like a Ty West, and I didn't know what he, I didn't know anything about him, except having seen his movie and being like intimidated before meeting him, being like, this guy's gonna be like, so was he gonna be like a fucking vampire or something?
Yeah.
And then he's like the nicest, coolest, normalest dude ever.
Like, wanted to talk about Atkins.
It's
like, oh, you're just like a normal, normal book.
You're like, you're just
This world. This is fun.
You know, Mischetti's first It fucked me up.
Yeah.
That was the most recent one where I was like, yo, this is really scary.
Yeah.
That first, that was a great movie.
Spooky.
Mike Doherty. And I used to do... get the trick or treat here.
Trick or treat.
We used to karaoke when we were like much younger.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Shout out to Mike.
Who knew you guys were big karaoke guys?
This is like 20 That's something years ago. This is,
yeah. They love karaoke. Ask them their favorite karaoke song. Who wants the karaoke? Yeah, we're gonna sexually karaoke podcast. Surprise. But guys, thank you so much for being on. You can't announce everything that you guys are doing. I know that Ready or Not 2 is
we got nothing
in the works. But is there anything that you want to work on in the future that's like a dream?
I think something kind like in the same way that like Ready or Not, Scream, Abigail, the way they came into our life. It's not. I don't think any of those things were things that we were actively searching, but when you see it, you go, oh my God, I love this. I want to do this.
It has
you
to know? Exist.
And then, yeah, and I think our whole thing is, you know, that we fall in love with shit and we get really invested. We don't like, we tune everything out while we're making a movie. And I think we want that experience. We just want to fall in love with something. And that's the only thing we can think about for a year and a half, however long we're working on it.
That's it. If anybody watching has any affiliation with an Edge of Tomorrow sequel, we
will do Edge of Tomorrow too.
Do it. We want another Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is so good.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. Movie. So good. But again, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a delight.
It's been so fun.
So fun. Guys, thank you for watching. Make sure to like, subscribe, all that jazz on Katie Frady on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, YouTube, all that jazz, and also thank you to Fangoria.
Thank you, Fangoria. Thank you, Phil.
You want a copy of Fangoria? Use code KatieAfraidy25 for 25% off.
Hell yeah.
It's a pretty good deal. And also Filmcraft Studio Gear. Gotta say thank you to them for these lovely, lovely chairs. Lovely. You can find them at filmcraftla.com or on Instagram at filmcraftla. And we will see you next time. Stay spooky.
Guys.
Oh, no. What the fuck is that thing?
We kidnapped a fucking vampire. A ballerina vampire.